Recorded live at Podcast One, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. And now here's your host, Daniel Bain.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this breaking news report. Daniel Beatty is the new host of Unscripted. That's right, you heard me. Daniel Beatty is the new host of Unscripted. People across the world are tuning in to witness what many are calling some deep shit. Ain't he an actor, singer, writer, activist? Why he hosting a podcast? Inquiring minds want to know. Now let's get some more live on-the-spot feedback. I was like, okay. Warren Beatty gonna do a podcast. I was like, all right. I've been liking him since Dick Tracy. No, Daniel Beatty with one T. Oh, okay, Daniel Day-Lewis. He can act. No, Daniel Beatty. Who's he? Well, I, for one, am intrigued. I'm excited to see where this goes.
It's appalling. I mean, it's a setback. In 2018, this is the last thing we need. Who gave him a podcast?
When I first heard the news, I was in stunned silence. Hallelujah! I'll be tuning in right after church.
My name Clarissa, and it's my boyfriend Peter. Hi, everybody, hi. I mean, I guess I never thought about Daniel Beatty. Peter, he sometimes be talking about him, but I don't pay him no attention. Oh, okay, wait, though. We did read about him in school. He does that poetry. Knock, knock. See, I told you, Clarissa. Shut up, Peter. Dang.
I am from Ghana, West Africa. Brother Daniel, we will be tuning in. Wakanda forever.
Who is this man? How will this story unfold? Stay tuned for further details. This is Daniel Beatty, the man of many voices, and what you just heard are several characters from my play Emergency that I've had the joy of performing at the Geffen Playhouse many times. It is my sincere pleasure to be your new host for Unscripted. My goal with this show is to explore the courage, the craft, the personal stories, why we as artists do what we do, and also the unique role artists have to play in this particular moment in our world. Let's face it, these are challenging times, and I believe artists have a unique role to play. Artists have a capacity to integrate mind, heart, and soul. We play on a daily basis in the realms of imagination, creativity, communication, and we are adept at finding possibility, even in the most dismal circumstances. And if you're feeling like me, you can use a little possibility and hope. So, thank you for tuning in to Unscripted. As you fall in love with what we're doing, and you will, please spread the word. And let's enjoy this safe space of conversation, contemplation, creativity, and courage. I used alliteration, I did. And now for our first guest.
Hey, humans. David Smalley here from the Dogma Debate Podcast, right here on Podcast One, where we talk about all the things you're not supposed to discuss at work: religion, politics, abortion, racism, slavery.
And that's only when we open the Bible.
We discuss Islam, Islamophobia.
What does that even mean?
We chat with vegans, animal rights activists, and even visit factory farms to see it for ourselves. I invite people from multiple backgrounds to convert me into their worldview. But as long as they're okay with being respectfully challenged,
you better bring your evidence.
And I never lose sight of how both the left and the right are seeming to lose their minds. So basically, we're solving all the world's problems right here on Dogma Debate.
And you've been missing it.
Download Dogma Debate on iTunes, Stitcher, or PodcastOne.com.
He's a Broadway baby, having starred in Good Vibrations, Jersey Boys, The Little Mermaid, and Guys and Dolls. He's a 3-time Emmy nominee and star of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. A diva's got range, hitting notes that make Leontine Price sip her champagne, and even Renee Fleming's a fan. He is unabashedly fierce, openly taking his place in the world as a black gay man, having a piercing intellect, and being of great heart. And I'm thrilled to call Titus Burgess a dear friend and to have you as my very first guest on Unscripted. How are you doing?
I'm so good. Thank you, Daniel. That was quite the setup.
Well, it's all true. It's all completely true.
So kind. So kind. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you. I'm super excited about this journey. So can we talk first for a minute about how you slay in the kitchen? I have personally been on the receiving end of many of your home-cooked meals. How did you learn to cook? Why do you cook when you could clearly order in?
Well, I think it all stems from my grandmother, who I would spend summer after summer with her. I'm an only child, so my mom would have to leave me with my grandparents during the summers as she worked, and the distance was too great to travel to drop me off at their home in time for her to get to work and such. So I would just spend the weeks in the summer with them, and then the weekends my mom would come and pick me up. So that came with many chore requirements and spending a great deal of time with her, which was in my later years, I realized was just charmed and special. But you know, while I was there, I would watch her prepare every meal because I had nothing else to do. So I would just, and I don't even know that I was consciously paying attention. I remember verbatim many of her recipes. So I have to credit her with teaching me without realizing she was teaching me.
What do you call your grandma?
We have this strange pronunciation of the word ma, M-A, and we called her moi. I can't articulate it or explain it, but it had a strange W in there somewhere for I don't know why, but that's what we called her.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You often like have community around you too, like even in the midst of days when I knew you shot Kimmy all day and sometimes had an interview, you still have people that you love around, and you would cook even in those times. And so is there something about community for you? Why would you do that?
I make it a point to surround myself with people that I find energizing and relaxing simultaneously. And you are one of those people. I find rest and rejuvenation in your company. And it is, you know, people who are low maintenance, who offer love, who have who don't expect anything from you, but who are there just because it feels good. And I don't know, I cooking for them, and you know, a lot of people say to me, you went home and cooked after a full day, or you don't have to cook for us, you know, we can order something. And I say, you know, I don't find it laborious, or I don't find it robbery to do that. In fact, it relaxes me because, as you know, in an industry where we have control over the choices that we make, but little control over how the industry works, the hurry up and wait of it all, it is nice to know that with some science and some instinct, I know exactly how something is going to turn out and when I will get it. And that is satisfying after coming home from a show that I do not write, oftentimes I, do scenes that, were not my ideas. And where, you get out of the car and you're told right away where to go, where to be, how to say it, when to be there. And this is, and I'm certain you understand and your listeners understand, this is not begrudging or not being appreciative of my good fortune in my job, but inside the job that you willed and prayed for, then there's the work. And the work can sometimes suffocate or sometimes you forget how much you enjoy it because of all the MINI many details that are lined up before you even get on camera.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so community, and cooking and that sort of exchange. And also, Daniel, it's all in a way, I don't even know that I've ever out loud or articulated this before, but it's kind of like getting to relive my time with my grandmother, or honoring my grandmother in some sort of way. You know, I get the same feeling that I got when I was watching her preparing for you guys.
You know, I've been going through an all experience of my own when I've been having a lot of memories come back. And, you know, our memories can often serve us as an artist. You know, when I've seen you perform, particularly when I see you sing, there is a way you display humanity and vulnerability in your singing. And this is separate from your amazing range and the beauty of your instrument. I'm talking about the sort of heart that's at the core of it. And that's also, I'm sure, rooted some in memories and things that you've grown through and experienced. So I'm curious if that capacity has always been in your singing, if that's something you've developed, and if you can talk about where that comes from.
Okay. That's going to require me to see myself the way you described it. And when I'm doing these things, I'm not necessarily clocking that that's what people are experiencing. So just bear with me while I talk through it for a second.
Yeah.
I think I love communication. Mm-hmm. And I think it one of my strongest suits, being able to relay information in a way that does not condescend, nor does it dumb down what is being said. And for me, that broken down description of what communication is inside singing, it's inside playing the piano, it's inside cooking, it's inside a floral arrangement. It's all the same thing, just different forms of information, different ways to convey something. So and because I am so concerned with people receiving the message, I think I, or at least I know that I take extra care, extra time to say it the way I would want it told to me. And that is how I go about singing. That's it. That is what I am experiencing, or that is my construct on purpose.
Yeah, that's powerful. So what I hear in that, I hear a clear purpose to really communicate with people. I hear like a level of integrity, like I don't want to condescend to people. And I hear commitment that leads to vulnerability, which is that I want to communicate this so specifically in such a way that, you know, I'm going to do what's necessary to honor what it is that I'm communicating. That leads me, because that's such a thoughtful response. And, you know, some people see artists as actors, singers. Maybe less so with writers, but strictly acting and singing is like it's a gift. It's what people have been given. And some people understand even that there's a craft to that gift. But I want to ask you specifically about the intellect of craft. Even hearing you talk, it seems like there is a place that's an intellectual exercise. There's a place that's coming from your heart. And maybe there's even sort of a soul impulse. Like, where does your creative impulse and your intelligence around creativity live for you?
Wow. Beaver, you're a thinker. Jesus, you asked the most thought-provoking questions. Okay. Well, Daniel, I mean, okay. Let's see. If I piggyback on the wanting to being so concerned about the message that I don't want to condescend and I don't want to dumb it down, I also – there's a very tricky balance I'm finding, and I got to be real careful how I say this one, mm-hmm. these days. It has been my experience that I it feels to me like the world collectively mm-hmm. has grown more impatient. And with that impatience, there is a hunger and a thirst for bodegas, the convenience store of it all, quick information, both to process so that you can regurgitate with very little thought. This, coupled with many people being put into positions of power who belong to that group of short-sighted thinkers, I'm finding are now in positions where they are running creative institutions, networks, stores,
government,
corporations that directly affect my day to day. And I, in turn, try and turn the situation inside out to see the skeletal system, to see the nervous system, so that I can figure out what's connected to what and what will trigger this and what will inadvertently fix this, et cetera, et cetera. And that those are the tools with which I instinctively and impulsively use as far as my intellect is concerned to create what I create or sing what I sing, et cetera. So it is often, both on behalf of people who, if they knew what I was doing, would shut me down, and for the people who know what I'm doing, so I can equip them with the tools to combat the people that I started this sentence off talking about.
Whew, you are pulling from some deep old stuff, I know just from knowing you that your spirit of your grandmother is with you, and that sort of old wisdom energy is with you. Like, one of the people who was super influential in my life that I've talked about is Ruby Dee. And she said something to me that I feel like references what you're saying, which is, we've always had to dance with a gun at our feet. You know what I mean? So it's the subversive nature of artists who are trying to create space or be in full voice in a world and in a place that doesn't have sufficient space or doesn't want to hear. I had another woman that I worked with, a brilliant strategic planner named Jackie Lindsay, say that when there were only made roles available, there was still a subversive nature in terms of how those roles were portrayed. It's like the dignity with which you bring to that maid. You know what I mean? So, like, you're going levels deeper than that, which I think is part of our privilege and opportunity with all that's been sacrificed before. But I just am grateful for your exploration and sharing of your process, because, it's not just getting up, and singing a song or showing up every day to do a role. When you operate at the level of intention that you are, there's a lot of clarity and soul searching and sometimes even strategy in terms of what's happening. And I think it's a gift to our listeners to share that. One of the things that I want to ask you about, some of the people who are in our listening audience are performers or aspiring performers. And many of them are in moments when their dreams and what they want feels so far away. And it's like, how am I ever going to get to a Broadway stage, or how am I ever going to be a series regular on a successful show?
And, I overstand those legs.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like, yeah, you are soaring, and I know it's been a hard-fought journey. And I know there's other amazing dreams that you've been into unleash on the world. But I wonder if you could speak a little bit about a moment in your life when you weren't certain or did not have, or you probably were certain on you, but you were not in the moment of clarity about exactly how and when. Yeah.
No, but you were there, Daniel.
Yeah.
You were there for, you know, a large chunk of the dark period of my life. About a decade ago, I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression, and I was in a career transition, and I was finishing up Guys and Dolls. I'll try. This could turn into a long story. Let me just see.
We have time. You can share your story. We have time.
I was in Guys and Dolls, and that was what, 2008, 2009, and I remember not getting, well, okay, I'm about to stop, talk specifically about the dream that I had to work in television from theater. Mm-hmm. But energetically, this explanation can work for whatever it is that you want, be it writing or being on Broadway or whatever. But what I found in my theatrical experience was, for me, unfortunately, and this wasn't every production, but it was like finding out that there was no Santa Claus.
Hmm.
And many of my creative experiences building shows from the ground up were led by either incompetent producers or incompetent creative teams. And that began to wear on me in such a way that I became it put me and theater in couples therapy. I would walk through Times Square and like not feel anything, and I was mourning that so deeply, and I thought, God, what in the fuck are you trying to say to me? Because I've been so clear up until now, you know, but I started to feel what I later realized was a pregnancy. I started to feel pangs interruptions in my spiritual journey that because of the hiccups, made me kind of fall to the floor. And when I got up, I was looking in a different direction, but still trying to walk towards the thing I was most familiar with.
Okay, let me just unpack just for a second the layers of what you just said, and then please, I want you to continue. This is like living what was experienced as a dream, you know, for a long time, you know, getting to Times Square, getting to Broadway, fighting through experiences that have been difficult in the journey, but going down a path that you had committed to, that you were so clear was your path, but something stumbling, something sort of interrupting you in that journey, and a discomfort that you experienced as pain, but was actually pregnancy, was actually a moment of becoming. And I just want to reflect that back to the listeners, because sometimes there are these pivotal moments in our journey when it seems like everything is falling apart, or we feel deeply disrupted in our emotions, even in our spirits, but these actually are moments of becoming. You know, there's a very Judeo-Christian Western philosophy that moments of darkness are moments of difficulty, but in our West African spiritualities, darkness is actually the time of becoming. The man goes to the darkness. The boy goes to the darkness to become a man. So I just, yeah. So please keep telling us about this journey.
And I want to pause and just give you a virtual hug and a huge bravo because you are a natural. This is so lovely to talk to you.
Oh, you're so sweet.
I think you're going to ease into this nicely. First of all, that was a great unpacking, and I'm going to fast forward and then I'm going to regress. Mm. So on this side of it, I realize now, you know, what the kind of what you just said, but the appearance of chaos is often just your furniture being rearranged. Hmm. And you may not know where, you know, how to get to the bathroom in the dark, but it's still the same place, you know, just things are shifted around a little bit. So I remember talking to my then agent, who's no longer with me, I'm no longer with, rather. I was like, she was content with me being the big black woman that stops the show. Mm. I was sick of being in pieces that did not require anything more of me than to sing a couple of high notes and then I'd disappear. And I'm like, no, and not because I have such a strong desire to be the center of attention. But I was like, no, the show is about me. Like y'all need to rethink this. People began to both reveal themselves and what was not going to change about the industry revealed itself. I mean, I just, in hindsight, it just was so fascinating to watch, the truths, you know, being revealed and falsehoods, you know, taking their clothes off and me seeing, the underbelly of this situation. But so I remember saying here, you know, I'm no longer happy in theater, and I would like to try and, you know, maybe audition for a TV or whatever. I feel like I'm supposed to do something else. And, you know, she didn't have the bandwidth or the reach, but so she shut that down saying, you know, well, Titus, you don't have, you know, Tony Awards like Audra McDonald and you don't have a reel and all these things. I'm like, well, okay, but aren't you supposed to help me do those things so that I can get it? But I was also like, I don't need a Tony Award to be on TV. Yeah. But you know, the transition from theater to TV, you know, all these things. I'm like, okay, honey, and then she also told me that I was too dark. This was just,
oh my God. Good Lord. Okay. Let me just unpack a little bit more for a second, just because I want everyone listening to fully get what you're saying. What I'm hearing too is that powerful moment of belief in oneself, despite the feedback you're receiving, or a belief in one's possibility despite the evidence or other people's rules, right? Because you are a trendsetter and you are creating space where there's not been space. And part of that's what vision is, right? Visionaries have to see what's not there, even if it's for themselves first. And then once they show up, then they create space for others. So I just want the listeners to get that part too.
Yeah. I was a little stunned by her response, but the discomfort of my current or my then current situation grew larger than the no that she was giving me. So I left her to find someone to help support my trying to relieve this discomfort. And so I start to take some classes and all these things. And I was not very good at it. But I was determined to figure it out, but I was so self-conscious about, you know, how I look and all these things. And, but finally I was like, you know, well, you something's got to give here, you know? And I remember it was after Guys and Dolls had closed, and I was facing eviction because I couldn't pay my rent. And I had just gotten an appointment, my first television appointment for 30 Rock. And it was for was called an under five, not to insult anyone's intelligence. That literally means you have under five lines. This is also a departure. Okay. So I was sick this morning, that particular morning. And I also looked at the line the night before and I thought, I don't know how. First of all, I just don't feel like I know what I'm doing on camera, but I also, how do I create anything with a sentence? I'm so used to a full scene for theater, you know, a song where.
Where are my lines, darling? Where are my lines?
This information. And so I was sick and I called my manager and I was like, I don't feel good. And that's, of course, no agent wants to hear that because they think you're just out partying and being lazy. Mm-hmm. But I was legitimately sick. And I had never been to 30 Rockefeller Plaza before. So she convinces me to pull through. I get there, can't find my way around the building. I'm already about 40 minutes late. And I see a theater colleague of mine walk in the door, someone who I'm not a fan of, but she looked like she knew where she was going. And I didn't want to talk to her. But I just sort of watched where she was going. Long story short, found the desk for guests to sign in or whatever. And got up to the floor for casting. And they were an hour and 15 minutes behind.
So you were still early.
Say one more time.
So you were still early.
So I was still early. So I go in and I do my one line and she starts laughing. And Daniel, I swear to God, before I got out of that building, my agent had called me and told me I booked it. Now, I just want to call attention to how the universe was dancing with me then. All right. So the power of my desire, the power of my collective desire to start this journey in television outweighed the negative, both the negative energy of the agent and my energy the morning of, because still not only worked out in my favor, but there was wiggle room all over the place for me to land where I was supposed to land. And I think that speaks to that nudge that I was feeling, that gentle nudge of, you know, all the hiccups and the pregnancy, all those things that I was feeling when I was in pursuit of, you know, what I was supposed to do next. This was, you know, all in support of that, because I waltzed into my first gig with my first television job with great ease. Now, this isn't going to be everyone's journey, but there's more to this story. So I get there and I'm panicking. I'm praying. I show up to set the next day, panicking, and I'm praying, my God, just please let someone else, let it be someone else's coverage. I don't know what the fuck coverage was, but I just had heard that term. let someone just, so that I can watch and maybe I can kind of on the job learn what it was I was supposed to do. Well, of course, the first scene that is up is a scene that I did not even audition with and didn't even have. They had written more for the character DeFuan, and my first on-camera experience was with Tina Fey.
Wow.
And it's about, like, just, you know, all your bodily functions doing their own thing. And I don't get intimidated easily, but, like, I was genuinely scared. And so cut to two seasons, I think a five-episode arc. And on the last day, Alec Baldwin turned to the producers and he said, "What are you guys waiting on? This man deserves his own show. He needs a spinoff, you know." And they all laugh and ha 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 ha. Well, I go home to the apartment that I was packed up and prepped to move out of because the building had gotten bought now, and tacked on $700 to my rent. I'm like, well, is the square footage growing? But it was not. Right. So I got on my knees and I was like, today I received the confirmation that I had been praying for. And I said, God, if you will allow me to, I think I'm deserving of a series regular. I think I can hold my own. I finally understand it. I understand acting for the camera. And I was like, and if you allow me to do that with my resources, I will stretch it to my last dime to assist and put people in places that they would not be able to do were it not for my assistance. And I said, so, you know, you have my word that I will do this if you give me a job. Well, I prayed that prayer over and over and over and over, and it cuts about 4 or 5 years later. I get a text from a manager saying, when's the last time you spoke to Tina Fey? And I'm like, well, I mean, we don't exactly braid each other's hair, so I'm not seeing her since I wrapped 30 Rock. She goes, well, either you're about to get a job or this is a cruel joke. And it was a screenshot of a breakdown. The breakdown says, seeking the role of Titus Andromedon, down in his luck, lives in a basement apartment, wants to be a Broadway star. Well, I was living – oh, it lives in Harlem. I don't know if I said that. But I was living in Harlem in a basement apartment with no job, looking for a job. And I thought, dear God, this is absolute madness. Well, I got the job. And when I showed up to set, they sent me a text the night before, and they said, Titus, report to 50th and 9th, and we will walk you to your trailer. My trailer was on 47th Street between 8th and 9th, literally outside of the building that I left because I couldn't pay the rent, where I prayed for this job. I could have walked out of my door and into my trailer for my new TV show. Wow. I don't remember what your question was, but I think I answered it.
You answered it. So, like, from the journey of, like, discomfort and where you were to following that impulse and not knowing quite how to do it, but learning and figuring it out, to the resistance and the space for grace, you know, in the first opportunity with 30 Rock, to even then, like, okay, I'm here, I'm ready now, you know, Alec Baldwin saying, you know, give this man a show, and then a 4 or 5 year pause delay, but right in the same space where you made that prayer and really that covenant with Spirit, with God, you come back and you shoot the show, which is now entertaining, moving, touching so many people all over the world.
Yeah, I want to specifically call attention to that delay, because that was a grueling 4 years where I hadn't ceased prayer, but it was looking mighty bleak. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why, as humans, the only way sometimes to get us to understand the power of Spirit, God and the universe, is to strip us. But I'm not going to question it, but it was bleak, and I'm ever so grateful for my good fortune and the fulfillment of that covenant on the part of Spirit, because it makes me fear it, love it, and revere it simultaneously. And I don't take lightly what I said. So, you know, provided we show up and do our part, and provided that the subtextual energy of the ask is not a selfish one, but that it extends beyond us, I think adds urgency and pleases Spirit and delights it in bringing into fruition what we've asked for.
Those words are so profound, and it's the core of what I believe as well. And it's really that we're here for each other. That's the whole point. We're here for each other, and that's what this urgent moment in our nation and our world is calling us to remember. And my friend, that's what you've done for me by being my first guest on the podcast. So thank you for being here. I want you to know I'm proud of you and I'm grateful. And I do want to honor the way that you're creating space and a platform where there was none. You are a trailblazer. I want to say that word right. You are a trailblazer. You are a voice. You embody joy and heart and vulnerability. And we thank you for your humor and your wit and your humanity. And just keep slaying, Diva, because we're here for every minute of it.
Oh, my God. I love you, Daniel. Thank you so much. I didn't realize how much I needed this. I'm so glad.
I love you, too.
All right. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Talk to you soon. And with that, this is your new host of Unscripted, Daniel Beatty. Until next week, take care of yourselves and remember to look for the miracles. Because despite the evidence in this crazy world, there are miracles all around us. And the first one is you.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app, at podcastone.com, or on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to rate, review, and share the show on Apple Podcasts.